Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to our bi-weekly broadcast of Money and Other Things Financial. This is your host, Bostonian, coming to you live from Boston, where else? Massachusetts, on July the 12th, 2020. It's 11 p.m. Sunday night. Maybe many of you are sleeping, that's why you can't come and visit me. But I would like you to join in and give us your thoughts about the issues of the day. I'll spark your whet your appetite with a few ideas, and you can take over at your show and let me know your thoughts. Let me give you the call-in number, and first of all, let me give you the temperature. Believe it or not, at airtime, it's 80 degrees in Boston, starting to get some summer weather. This weekend was the first time I turned on my air conditioner, and it's already mid-July, well, a month into the summer almost, so I've been using the fan prior to this weekend. But anyway, the call-in number is 914-803-4379. And the chat room is open. There's no one in there now, but come on in and help us to have a good conversation. You need two people to do that. So there's no one in the chat room now, but if you do come, don't leave too quick because other people might come in later. So the call-in number again is 914-803-4379. Now, as we're approaching July the 15th, I want to remind everyone that that is the new tax deadline. Since the original deadline of April 15th was extended for 3 months because of the coronavirus pandemic, and so time is running out even on that. There's no stopping the clock. It ticks and talks until the deadlines come up for action. So there is a deadline coming up on Wednesday, July 15th, and if you haven't got your tax return done, by then you'll have to file for an extension. You didn't have to file for this extension. This was automatically provided by the IRS. And many of the states, as far as I know, all the states that have income tax filing requirements have gone along with that deadline. I know my state of Massachusetts, which seemed to hold out for the longest time, finally did come around and extend that deadline to July the 15th. So get your tax returns prepared, and hopefully you won't owe them, but I believe there's some benefits if you do owe them to pay them by July 15th, and I believe you will save some money in the area of penalties and or interest. So tonight I want to start out, as I have for the last several shows, talking about the coronavirus statistics. So I'm going to pull up the website that has that. And you can go on there also and look at them with me. If I can find it here. Oh, it's disappeared on me. So let me see. Here we go, I have it now. The website is www.worldometers.info.com. I'm sorry, .info/coronavirus US. www.worldometers, that's an S at the end, .info/coronavirus. And you should be able to pull up all the statistics. But I'm going to go over the highlights that I've been doing in the last, probably since the coronavirus seemed to be in the news all the time. I think it's been at least since March. But the shows I've been doing in the past have reported to you the statistics. So on the latest stats on the pandemic is on the global level, there are 4,870,866 active cases. And there have been 570,567 deaths and recoveries. Recovered amount is 7,567,909. So over half of those infected have recovered. The death rate is 570,567. Sometimes somebody said to me once that you talk about these just numbers, but these are people with family and friends and a life, and the 570,567 are no longer with us because of this virus. So we need to pray continually that this pandemic comes to an end and we're not plagued by it forever. We do have to be concerned about second waves, and who knows, there may be third waves, and we just don't know. Now, I'm going to give you the U.S. statistics. By the way, the total of the active, the deaths, and the recovered add up to a total infected amount of 13,009,342. Now, in the U.S., the infected amount is 3,408,174, and of those, 1,756,508 are active, and the deaths are 137,735, and the recovered is 1,513,931. Now, of the deaths in the previous 2 weeks when I gave the death figures, it was 128,392. So it's gone up about 10,000 in 2 weeks, or roughly 5,000 a week. And these latest figures are changing all the time. So when you go on to that Worldometers website, you can keep updating it and get the latest. I'm kind of a suspect, again, as I said in the past, of these numbers. It's all how well the numbers are tallied. I hear some stories that people that die from something other than coronavirus get added into the coronavirus figures, which isn't good. But this is the information we have to go on. Our main concern should be to pray for help from our Creator that this pandemic come to an end, and that we ask for His help to protect us from it while we're dealing with it. There's some other stats I'd like to give to you. The second leading country in total deaths after the USA, which is first by far, is Brazil. Brazil has 72,151, about 50,000 less than, maybe 60,000 less than us. Some of the other high figures are Mexico has 35,006, United Kingdom 44,819, Italy 34,954, France 30,004, India 23,187, Spain 28,403. So those are the leading countries, and there's figures all the way down to the smaller countries that have. Here's one country, Ghana, has 139 deaths. And here's Nepal with 38 deaths. Here's Costa Rica with 30 deaths. And I don't know if anyone is lower. Yeah, 13 in the Maldives, 11 deaths in Sri Lanka. And and single deaths, Mozambique, 9 deaths. And 3 deaths in Reunion, 9 deaths in Malta, 1 death in Botswana. So it goes all the way. Here's a country with no deaths reported, a few of them. Antrea, Gibraltar, Cambodia, and Bhutan, French Polynesia, St. Vincent, Grenadines. There's quite a few that at the bottom of the list with no deaths reported. So every country is somewhat impacted, whether even if it's just economically, or they may have relatives in other countries. So again, we need to pray. That's our best answer to this. The scientists in the medical field are probably doing their best, but I believe that we need to get help from our Creator, so I urge you all to have this in your prayers constantly. All right, by the way, the percent of the increases seem to be going down. The number of deaths seem to be down to 7%, a 7% drop from the previous show, and the global is 13%. So let's continue to see they talk about a bell curve, and we may be on the downward slope of that curve. Let's hope we are. Although we do hear talk about a second wave, and some of the countries are being questioned whether the lockdown were done too soon, as some of them may be getting a second wave and have to lock down for the second time. So how many of you are out there dealing with this, and how are you doing with your social distancing and your mask wearing? I see the buses go by my place here with a sign on the marquee of the bus saying face mask required, and board in the rear doors of the bus. So the bus driver is protected, as people will be in the back part of the bus, and they do have to wear a face mask. I've been wearing it when I have to go into stores, but when I'm out in the general street, walking in the street, running to the stores, or going to the bank or other errands, I do not wear the mask. But you have to decide for yourself. I know that there is some views that the mask hampers you when you're outdoors, when the sun is shining and you have a mask on and you're not getting the fresh air. So it could be detrimental as opposed to a good thing to do. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about a few recent court decisions. Supreme Court of the United States, or SCOTUS, has come up with a couple of decisions recently. I think they're going to be closing up their shop pretty soon for the summer break. But there's two decisions I want to talk about. One is on the president's tax records, and the other is on religion, employment for religious organizations. And in the case of the president's tax records, there was a couple of decisions, one in New York court, with 7-2 decisions that appeared to go against the president, saying that he's not above the law, but the general consensus is that he probably will not be required to release his tax returns, at least not before the election. So what do you think? Should he have to release his tax returns? I think most presidents have done it, but whether to make it a requirement, I don't think it's stated anywhere that he has to. You could put it into the Constitution, but as of now, I don't see why he has to release the tax returns. If he doesn't do it and you don't like that as one of his practices, then you, and it's serious enough, you could support the other candidates. Now, the other issue is the Supreme Court decision on religion, and that seems to be creating new questions. There were two cases that were decided, again, both by 7-2 decisions. This appears to be going in favor of religious freedom. The decisions are somewhat clouded because they look like they're just going to continue into the future with more cases. But the court has said that the LGBTQ persons have civil rights, but new rulings also give religious institutions more freedoms from the government. Critics don't like this and see it as an erosion of the relationship between church and state. The cases involved well, first I want to read, it says, a conservative-leaning faith leaders and their allies outspoken in recent years about what they consider infringements on religious liberties cheered Wednesday as the Supreme Court issued a pair of rulings that protected certain rights of religious employees. So there were a couple of cases, and they're both 7-2 decisions, apparently in favor of the employer. In the Our Lady of Guadalupe School versus Morrissey Barrow, the High Court sided with the two Catholic schools in finding that certain employees of religious schools, hospitals, and social service centers can't sue for employment discrimination. Critics fear that the 7-2 ruling will embolden some religious organizations to fire or otherwise discriminate against LGBTQ employees. But the courts apparently, and I tend to agree with them, that the religious organizations would have an untenable position if they had to hire people that were practicing lifestyles and activities that were contrary to the very nature of their institution. And this would especially apply to those working in those institutions that are closely connected to the religious aspects of the activity. For example, a religious teacher, for example, would be somewhat different than, say, the janitor working at the religious organization. But so there'll probably be more cases. This was a case where the High Court did side with the two Catholic schools, and you'd have to go into all the details and do your research about that case. In the second case, the Little Sisters of the Poor versus the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania also decided 7-2, the court upheld the Trump administration's allowance for a broad religious or moral exemption from the Obama-era Affordable Care Act requirement that employers provide free contraception. Opponents say the decision could leave more than 70,000 women without it. But again, the Little Sisters of the Poor find that abortion and these practices are contrary to their religious beliefs. Vice President Mike Pence, a Christian who is talking on this issue, sent out a tweet, and he reflected the victorious mood on the religious right with a politically tinged tweet underscoring the centrality of President Donald Trump's courtship of conservative faith-based voters ahead of November's election. Pence goes on to say, two big wins for religious freedom at SCOTUS today. All Americans of faith can be assured that under President Trump, the Obama-Biden assault on religious liberty is over. So you can do your own research on that, ladies and gentlemen, but I think the courts have pretty much come down on the right side of it, but there's still, there are such fine points on these issues as to where it crosses over between a unlawful discrimination and violation of religious freedoms. There is some argument to be made that discrimination should be allowed throughout the country, regardless of whether it's a religious organization or not, on the grounds that the government doesn't have a right to tell you who you may hire and who you may not. And argument there is that if people practice illicit discrimination, then the public can solve the problem by not supporting those businesses, and you will see that they gradually fade into non-existence because they cannot make a go of it. But of course, then if the public is racist or discriminatory, improper discrimination, then that would not occur. But the country would be in a sad case, and I don't think that's the way it is. I think people want to do the right thing, and they will follow their conscience, and they wouldn't support outright racism or unfair practices by businesses. All right, so let me give you the call-in number again. Let me get your thoughts. Well, let me check out first on the chat room and see how it's doing. There's no one in there, but the call-in number is 914-803-4379. Now, I want to see the time ticks off so quick. I want to play a clip from Dr. Chaps. He always gives me some good information for you to listen to. And he's got a guest on his recent show, a reporter, investigative reporter. He's had him on his show, and I've played his clip in the past. His name is Alex Newman, and he's with a website that you'll hear about in the clip. So here's Dr. Chaps talking with Alex Newman. Here we go.
So we have a live interview with a returning guest and fan favorite, a dear friend of the program, Alex Newman, writes for The New American. He writes for Epic Times. He writes for WorldNet Daily. I want to welcome him to the program. How are you today, Alex Newman?
I'm doing great, Dr. Chaps. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, good. I'm so excited to have you on because you've recently written about several things. I want to get started with the riots. And we've seen terrible race riots around America with looters and arson and violence. And, of course, we denounce racism. We believe this all started with one lawless policeman, Derek Chauvin, who apparently murdered George Floyd, and we condemn that lawlessness, ironically, inside of a law enforcement official. But now that lawlessness has spread around the country into other people who oppose racism, as we do, and some of them are Antifa, some of them are right-wing conspirators who want to cause havoc and violence instead of peaceful protesting. You've been doing some research on the funding sources of these riots, and are they well-funded, and is there somebody behind the scenes pulling the strings?
They're incredibly well-funded, Dr. Chaps, and my most recent cover story in The New American, which went to press a few days ago, and it'll be arriving in mailboxes very soon, depending on when you're watching this, it deals exclusively with this subject. The title is What's Behind the Riots? And what we show is, first of all, the main organizations that are involved in this are so shady, they wouldn't last 5 minutes under public scrutiny. If the media were to tell you honestly what the founders of these groups believe, what the groups themselves believe, what they're up to, what their goals are, they would disintegrate almost immediately. Black Lives Matter, Antifa, the Sunrise Movement, on and on. And then one level beyond that, we looked at where is the money coming from. And it's actually a very, very simple matter to track down the funding. A lot of these groups file IRS forms and IRS Form 990, and you can find out who is putting the money behind these organizations. You have the Rockefeller Foundations, right? And ironically, the Rockefellers during the 1920s, during the 1930s, they were some of the biggest financiers of eugenics and racial pseudoscience. They were financing Joseph Mengele, for crying out loud, before he started doing his experiments on children. In concentration camps. You've got, obviously, George Soros, who's been pouring millions of dollars into the Black Lives Matter movement and its auxiliary organizations. They've even been training Black Lives Matter people. You have Antifa, where you have just recently Project Veritas got footage of one of their operatives bragging that they got a grant from George Soros. So, you know, it's not very hard to learn all this information. It's actually all publicly available. The only reason why your average American doesn't know this is because the fake media won't talk about it.
So what is the name of George Soros' foundation, and don't they do other good things, you know, legitimate charities, and how do you distinguish that from this dark activity?
I'm actually not aware of any legitimate operation or charity that the George Soros' foundations do. The main one is the Open Society Foundations is what they call it. And they perpetrate so much evil. I mean, you can toss a dart in any direction and you'll hit something evil that George Soros is funding. And, you know, to Christians, who I know are primarily your audience, it is so corrupt and so nasty. Let me give you several examples. George Soros funds fake Catholic organizations trying to weasel their way into the Catholic Church, promoting things that are completely antithetical to Catholic teaching. One obvious candidate would be Catholics for Choice. And, of course, they're not talking about choice in terms of being a free person. They're talking about choice in terms of being allowed to murder your unborn child. And I'm not a Catholic personally, but if I were, I'd be pretty outraged about that because, of course, it's against Catholic teaching and against the Bible to support the murder of unborn babies. On the evangelical front, George Soros and his foundation have been exposed funding the Evangelical Immigration Roundtable, right, which is a pseudo-Christian organization that brought in some Christian names that are well-known to kind of give cover and legitimacy to what they're doing, funding a movement for open borders that is completely antithetical to what the Bible teaches. The Bible tells us that God created the nations. In fact, the last time they tried to build this world government, God came down and separated them into different nations and gave them different languages precisely because he did not want them united under one global system.
All right, well, there's a great interview, and I'd like to encourage you to go on to Dr. Chaps' website, but we're coming to the end of the first live portion of the show, and I want to just say that the approval ratings for the president have dropped some more. His approval rating is 41.6, and his disapproval is 56.2, both of them negative for the president, so he needs to start coming back and restore and get some better results. The next show will be on July 27th, July 26th on Blog Talk Radio, so I want you to come and join me then. I'm sorry I'm cutting this so short, but we do have to run, so God bless you all. Good night, and God bless America. Good night, everyone. welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bostonian, host of The Money Show. And boy, that first half hour went by quick. I wasn't able to give you the figures from the stock market. I'll just quickly tell you what they were now. The Dow closed at 26,075.30. That was up from the previous show 2 weeks ago. The NASDAQ, 10,617.44. That was also up. The NASDAQ has been really on fire. That is all the technology stocks. And the S&P also was up from 2 weeks ago. It closed the week at 3,185.04. Gold has been ramping up. It was over 1,800 for the first time in some time, and it's finished the week just a tad below 1,800 an ounce at 1,798.60, and I see now as it's open for this new week, it is over 1,800 now. And silver is up to 1,868, and it looks like it's getting to be, that may hit $19 an ounce to Monday, as we go into the work week. Since I cut Alex Newman off, I'm going to finish playing a little of that clip, and then I have another clip for you. So here we go, Dr. Chaps and Alex Newman of The New American. And I encourage you to go to his website, which is thenewamerican.com, thenewamerican.com, and sign up and maybe show him that you want to support him. It's how we see what we support. We get what we support. I was going to start this show with a clip or a quote from Benjamin Franklin when a woman asked him after they formed the Constitution, well, what do we have, Dr. Franklin, a monarchy or a republic? And he came out with that famous remark, a republic if you can keep it. And it doesn't look like we've done a very good job on that, but it ain't over till it's over, so let's show Mr. Franklin that we can keep it by doing each of us doing our part. So here we go with the rest of the, or not the rest of it, but the rest of a section of the interview by Dr. Chaps with Alex Newman. Here we go.
Hey, scatter all over the world, like I told you before. And, you know, we have multiple references.
At the Tower of Babel, and that's when he created different languages, and that's right there in the book of Genesis.
That's right.
I found it ironic that when the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone was created in Seattle, the first thing the anarchists did, I was going to say Antichrist, but the first thing they did was create a border wall, and they're keeping people
out.
Isn't
that funny? I know. And, you know, one more example on the same subject, Dr. Chaps, is what he's doing in the Orthodox Church. We found out some years ago, and we reported in the New American, that Soros money was funding these programs in Eastern Europe with several goals and objectives. One of them was to promote globalism, to try to encourage, for example, the people of Georgia to join the European Union by training the Eastern Orthodox pastors to promote globalism, and also to get them promoting homosexuality, which, again, is of course, you know, a very, very serious thing, according to God's word. And so you have all these examples of George Soros trying to corrupt the churches, trying to corrupt nations. You know, the Black Lives Matter funding is just one very small component, but it's part of a much broader overarching agenda, which really is to take down everything that God teaches in his word. I mean, you have George Soros openly saying he feels like a god over and over and over again. You know, these are delusions, messianic delusions, delusions of grandeur. And we need to be honest when we speak about this. It's dangerous. It's evil. In my opinion, it's criminal, and it ought to be investigated.
Well, to be clear, we support, I think, most evangelical Christians condemn racism. We certainly do, because it violates Jesus' command to love your neighbor. And some of the innocent protesters, the peaceful protesters in the Black Lives Matter movement, they have good intentions, and yet behind it there is a darker goal, and that agenda is communism. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to see how the Communist Party of China is also involved at the UN and now in Donald Trump's reelection. They're opposing him.
Yeah, you want to hear that, so tune in to Dr. Chaps and listen to his complete interview with Alex Newman, and I think you'll get a lot out of that. All right, well, I've used up some of my non-live portion, but I have another clip that I think you would like to hear, and this is a clip from Dr. Lively, Scott Lively, who ran for governor of Massachusetts and who I supported enthusiastically in 2018. And let's listen to him. He's going to talk about the Bush Second Front against Trump. The Bush Second Front against Trump. Here we go.
This is my essay, Scott Lively, on the Bush Second Front against Trump. I will begin this article by confessing that I was once a strong defender of George W. Bush, President number 43, starting with the national conservative uprising triggered by the hanging Chad political scandal in the Bush versus Gore election of 2000. I participated in a massive gathering of conservatives who descended spontaneously on the California State House in my then hometown of Sacramento like a swarm of angry hornets, as others did in countless cities across America. I've since come to recognize that the Bush clan has always been deep state, its continuing political dynasty representing the top strata of the red Republican half of the Obama, Clinton, Bush, Romney, purple uniparty. I was not surprised, therefore, to see the Bush political war machine recently roll onto the 2020 election battlefield, flying the flag of George Soros' anti-Trump purple revolution. In early June, Bush 43 announced his intention not to vote for Trump, and then, as reported by WorldNet Daily in early July, a new pro-Biden super PAC, 43 Alumni for Biden, was created by, quote, hundreds of former George W. Bush staffers to, quote, unite and mobilize a community of historically Republican voters who are dismayed and disappointed by the damage done to our nation, not necessarily in full support of Biden's political agenda, but rather in full agreement with the urgent need to restore the soul of this nation, end quote. I predict this is just the beginning of a major second front in the elite's war on Trump. When we talk about deep state, we're talking about a huge, multi-layered, multidisciplinary, fully integrated network of cultural Marxists who share the common religion of secular humanism, its moral code of political correctness, especially regarding sexual morality, and the dogmatic cultural narratives that serve as scripture for them all. Its roots go very deep indeed, all the way back to the late 1800s in America. But the most relevant period for this essay begins with the shady career of deep stater George H.W. Bush, President 41. Bush 41 was apparently high-level CIA under JFK and LBJ before becoming a pro-abortion Texas GOP congressman during the LBJ administration. Though he denied having been a spook, a declassified FBI memo from J. Edgar Hoover himself named 41 as the sole CIA representative verbally briefed on November 23, 1963, about JFK's assassination the day before. There's always been considerable buzz in conspiracy circles about his and LBJ's possible role in that quote-unquote regime change. And, of course, Bush 41 was later tapped in 1976 as CIA director by Gerald Ford. I've long argued that Landslide Lyndon, American history's poster boy for election fraud, was the most corrupt president in U.S. history until Obama. From his infamous and unconstitutional 1954 Johnson Amendment, banning churches from endorsing political candidates, to his war on poverty agenda that created the federal entitlement system by which Democrats gained a seemingly unbreakable hold on nearly every big city in America, LBJ's legacy was poisonous. Yet, the LBJ Presidential Library features a special tribute to Bush 41, stating in part, quote, the Bush and Johnson families shared a long history and friendship beginning in the 1950s when Lyndon Johnson served in the U.S. Senate with Prescott Bush, George H.W. Bush's father. Although from different political parties, the two men enjoyed a productive working relationship steeped in mutual respect, end quote. The Bush 41 LBJ productive working relationship hinted at a purple uniparty long before we started color-coding the GOP as red and the Dems as blue. The much-heralded Bush 43 Bill Clinton congeniality was further evidence. Today, of course, we live in a world where Donald Trump's paradigm-shattering election of 2016 has exposed the purple uniparty so fully that Bush 43 has now unashamedly joined the Democrats and opened a second front in the war on Trump. Former Massachusetts governor, now Utah Senator Mitt Romney, has represented the Bush dynasty on the battlefield since 2016. He pops up whenever his cheap shots against Trump can get the maximum media coverage, the most recent regarding the Roger Stone commutation. Romney's protege, second-term Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, whom I ran against in 2014 and 2018, has also sniped repeatedly at Trump and will likely soon escalate his anti-Trump rhetoric. To show how cozy they all are, Baker's Purple Party predecessor and close Obama buddy Deval Patrick transitioned from the Massachusetts governor's office immediately to a seat on the board at Romney brand Bain Capital. Many establishment Republicans, meaning cultural Marxists who still pretend to varying degrees to be conservatives, have been forced to align with Trump to retain power. But now that Bush 43 has emerged from the shadows under the purple banner, some of them will show their true color as well. Looking back, I'm now convinced that Bush 41 intentionally lost to Bill Clinton in 1992 to fast-track the Marxist agenda on the understanding that the Bush clan would get back the baton later on, which happened, of course, in 2000. I believe that Bob Dole, John McCain, and Mitt Romney were all Bush team members tasked with taking a dive in their respective races. And that was the role Jeb Bush was intended to play for Hillary before Trump upset their apple cart.
Okay, well, we're running out of time again, so that was Dr. Lively. You can go to his website at scottlively.net, and you can hear all his audios and videos. He's got a wonderful site with all kinds of information. So I want to thank you all for coming, even though I didn't get any people coming tonight. But thank you anyway, and stay safe. Say your prayers, use your three V's, and we'll see you in 2 weeks on July the 26th, 2020. So good night, God bless you, and instead of saying it, I'm going to play it.